Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today we will talk about things like multi-stakeholder collaboration, I think. We might talk about sort of co-creation, I imagine, because that seems to be part of it. And we might talk about the Bible. And I'm actually equally excited about all of those things. And especially if we can make some link between them, then let's see what happens. It seems like a big task. Very welcome to the podcast, Caroline Botte.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you. I'm going to ask the most difficult question to start with. And sometimes it's also the easiest question, but depends a little bit. But I ask it every time. Who are you? Caroline Botte.
That difficult question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who am I? Okay, who am I right now? Actually, I'm just thinking about, I read that some years ago, I think I read that in some kind of spiritual text, that this is to say that I don't know who I am, and I don't know what I'm here for, and I don't know what I'm doing. That's what people are most afraid of. Mm. So I'm not going to say that, but actually that's a part of me, of course, that I don't know who I am, actually. I could say something maybe about my context and my experiences. And now I'm just thinking about, why is it important to say who I am? But then I think, yes, maybe it's important for people to know where I'm coming from when I say things. So. Mm. Okay, so I would say I'm right now, I'm living in Stockholm, in Sweden. I've been living here for 17 years now, I think. I'm working with collaboration practices, and I'm thinking a lot about the Bible and things like that, and existential things, and I love to be in conversations. I think I'm so happy to be a part of this conversation right now. Before I came to Sweden, I'm actually Norwegian, so I'm not Swedish. I grew up in Norway, and when I was 12, we moved to Munich in Germany. And I lived there for 19 years. I studied educational sciences and organizational psychology there, and then when my son started school, we decided to move to Sweden because I actually was longing for that Scandinavian way of educating kids in a way. So I say this because I think it can be an important part of me that I have different languages, different cultures. What else is it? I'm really, I'm really, really happy today because it's the blue sky, because it's so dark, and it's been rainy and gray for about many weeks. Feels like many years, but it's so. I thought about that this morning. It's just wonderful with a blue sky. Wow. So, do you think that's good about me, or do you think I should say something more?
I'm not one to judge. Is there something more that wants to be said?
Yeah. I don't know. I could say I have a company called Lenka Consulting together with my colleague Anna Singmark. And we founded that 2015. I can say that I'm still very inspired by exploring how we can come together from different perspectives, from different logical frameworks, and to understand things together, and trying to understand what is important for the whole, or to find new solutions, and to find we are into a lot of complex questions, of course, because that's where collaboration happens when you have a lot of, like, climate change or criminal, how do you say that in English? The criminal situation we have in Sweden right now. Do you know how to say that?
Like the justice issues, or I mean, some people call it a gang war.
I don't know. Yeah, gang war. You can call it gang war. Yeah.
Violence, I think, or like yeah.
Yeah, but it's yeah. So, but there are of course many complex issues about school, for example. We have a lot of young people staying at home. They don't want to go to school. That's a very complex issue. So there are a lot of issues that we can't understand only from one perspective, and we need to find the solutions by bringing together a lot of different perspectives. And so that's what I'm fascinated about, and what we have been writing books about it. We have a podcast about it called Art of Collaborating, and we are in a constant actually exploration of that. So I'm curious. I'm a curious person, I think. I hope that I'm a curious person. because I think that's a good thing to be.
Nice. Yeah, that helps. And I've been reading one of your books, To Lead a Complex Process, with a lot of it's been very nice. It's very clear. And it's very sort of, it's not, because I'm new to this field of facilitation in general, but also to sort of complexity as a thing. It's been like a study of mine on the side for maybe the last 5 years or so. And I find that, I mean, it might also be what I'm drawn to, but a lot of the literature is about complex things are very sometimes difficult to penetrate. There's a lot of language and a lot of different terms, and it's hard to know what they mean exactly. But I feel like the way that you've been putting it together in that book is just so, it's so clear. It's so like usable and kind of down to earth, and points to like there's a simplicity to it. And yet once you get into it, and if, you know, when you start applying the concepts, then that's when the hard stuff comes up, because you have to maybe stay curious or stay open or stay, I don't know, at least for me, it's a different stance that I was raised or taught as a kid that I could take. It's not controlled. It's not a plan. It's not rigidly holding on to the agenda. It's much more listening and much more openness and much more fluidity or flexibility. That's how I understand it. And you've somehow managed to put that in paper in a really nice way, in my opinion.
So. Wow. So happy to hear that. That's really, really great to hear. Because that's what we are trying to do in a way. We're trying to be a bridge between the research and all these kind of complex theories that are describing this field. But it's as you say, it's difficult to grasp sometimes. And we are trying to understand how can we really be practical about it in a way.
I'm gonna do the spaghetti test. I'll use you as the wall and throw some spaghetti at you, and then you get to react. idea spaghetti. But I have this feeling right from where I am at right now in my studies that a lot of working with complexity has to do with that openness, but also to be able to kind of maybe disconnect from how you would like things to be and look at things how they are, and then try to align the two in one way or the other, but sort of in a way be very blunt and in a way be very sensitive to how to present topics. And just kind of, I'm trying to get to sort of what is the heart of it? Why is it so difficult to bring different perspectives together? Or like, yeah, does that ring true to you? Or like, what's your
that's a really great question, and it's actually the core question, I think, to bring things together. And you can, I mean, there is something about it, I think. That's why I say that I hope that I'm curious, because I would like to be curious, because am I really curious, or do I just want to to be reassured in that way of thinking that I already have. You know, it's interesting with that when we are talking about being open-minded, because how can we be open-minded actually? And I think there is some there is an expression that I read in a book. I think it is the book Tree of Knowledge by Maturana and Varela, and they are biologists. And I think that's where I found that it's called be aware of the temptation of certainty. And I think that's something that is really tempting, you know, because we and in these complex issues, we really want to find out what is the right solution, what is the right way of understanding this. And that's what we are all trying to find out. So, and we are kind of, and then what we are missing when we are doing that is that if I try to find out what is the right solution, and I'm listening maybe to a lot of people, but I still want to find out what is the right solution, then I'm still, I see something, but I'm still blind for something else, because I'm always blind for something. So the way probably isn't that I can find to, that I can be certain in a way, even if that's what I really want to be, but that's not the solution probably. But the solution is to be able to hold that I'm not certain, and that's why I need to be curious about the others. And when I'm curious about the other perspectives on this, then something can happen that's not in my control. It's something else that is happening between us, and I don't know what that is, and I don't know what is going to be. But the process of me being curious is part of that way. I don't know. That's maybe very it's very difficult to put words on that, I think. But it's, do you understand what I'm trying to say? Do you think you understand?
I think so. I think I feel it, because it's, you kind of have to dispel some stories that are very prevalent in our culture. Mm. I think, like things like this is just talk, or like this is just like if we're talking about it, then we're not doing it. Mm. For instance, like. Those types of notions I find are very tricky, because, like, at least when I've been in processes where people are trying to come together to do something, then initially there is a lot of talk, and that is really frustrating. But there is a way that we can talk and everybody's just kind of talking, everybody's transmitting. But there is a way that we can talk and actually hear and listen to one another. Like, if we can create a process where we can actually hear one another and ask curious questions to actually find out what's going on, or like what they really mean, or like, and also triangulate that with our own position, like, not, but like, what does it mean if I believe them that they really mean what they're saying, and not trying to find that they're saying the same thing that I want to happen, then there's a possibility of something, of like a coming together, but the talk needs to happen for us to be able to have momentary clarity at some point, or something like that. It's like but it requires the listening, because it doesn't. There's a way that talk can just be talk, but there's a way that talk can also be actually doing the thing. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to put into words, but I still have a sense for what you were saying. Like that, there is that. What is okay? So, like you said, you want to be a curious person because you think that's a good thing. And I mean, even that is a little bit of a trap, maybe, because then we have an ideal of some. And then you've spent, I mean, what, like the better part of a few decades studying these topics. So, I mean, you know a lot. But how do you know when to be open and when to be kind of, how do you parse that? Curious and no knowledge. When do you know when it's time to move between those positions?
Yeah, you have really good questions. Yeah, because that's also interesting, right? Okay, I have one example. We were part of a collaboration process with other consultancy firms and researchers and so on, and different stakeholders. And we were a part of that collaboration process, so we weren't leading it. We weren't the leading part. So, and that was then in that process, I could really feel that everything of what we are writing about and talking about. It's the first thing is, okay, in the beginning, you are kind of curious about the others, and you are open-minded, and you want to, and you see the potential, right? I see the potential from my view. Wow, this and this and this could happen here. And then after a while, I realized that the other ones, they don't see the same potential in this as I do. So they are, and they see the road or the way we are walking together in a completely different way. And I think that, well, I mean, I've been doing, I know a lot about, as you said, I know a lot about collaboration, right? So mm-hmm. I think I know a lot about that. So I was so frustrated in that process because I didn't feel listened to. And I think this is something very typical for those processes, that no one feels listened to because everyone is so really wants to get his or her own perspective, want to convince the other ones of this is the right way of doing it. But in that process, I was so frustrated that I didn't feel good. You know, I was really stressed out. So I had so many fights with myself because I was really trying to figure out, what is this? Is it so important that I stand up for what I believe now? Or is it more important that I listen to the other ones? But I couldn't, something was not, was for me, it was not, I couldn't be in that process anymore. So I actually quit. But my colleague, Anna, was stayed in the process. And that was an interesting process too, that we had different views on it. Because I wanted, of course, to be kind of, I wanted her to understand why I didn't want to be part of it. And she didn't. And she, of course, wanted to, that I understand why she's in that process, and I didn't understand it. So we had to find a way of accepting that, of course, and being very having kind of a goodwill towards each other in what we were doing, and really, so in a way, understanding why it's important for you to do what you're doing. That was maybe the key in it. But that process was, and now looking back now, because Anna said that she was also frustrated and so on, but she said, but you know, we don't know what is coming out of this process. I don't know that yet. So I don't take it so seriously. And for me, it was more like, yes, but when I invest time in this, then I want to take it seriously. So when I feel I can't do what I could do, I can't put effort into this, you know, it's not that didn't feel good for me. So looking back at it, I could say we were both in a way, we were both right, because it was the way we did it, but no one was right, but we were both right. So yeah, so that's maybe a complex thing, but I think it's because it comes down to, in a way, those choices you make, right? So your question was about when do you force yourself to be open, and when do you think that it's important to not be open?
But that's, it's an interesting, I mean, what you're describing, what I'm hearing, at least from what you're describing, is that in a way, Anna was able to kind of be playfully serious in that process. Like she was able to stay open so that that although she was frustrated, she was still kind of listening and learning. There was like a process of exchange going on for her, whereas for you, it was so frustrating that you were kind of, you were closed off. So you weren't really dealing with the process anymore. You were kind of dealing with your internal process. And so you chose to step out. And so there's like, that seems to be like right on that limit then between, and it doesn't have to do with necessarily more or less capacity, but maybe more of like a fittedness to the process. Like the type of frustration was something that she had more capacity for. And therefore she could stay open in that, you know, or it wasn't as important to her. She maybe wasn't as passionate about it or something like that, even. Because it might have been a topic that really, you know, that hit home on some core values, which I also think is interesting because a lot of where I'm in the space where I'm at, which is sort of the world saving, that type of idea that we're going to do something that's important to the world. Mm-hmm. And then there's always the invitation to like, oh, you should work close to your values and like you have to focus on your purpose and you should only do your purpose and everything else, you know, and a lot of the time I feel like people's purposes are sometimes defined in a way that they are really conflicting, like depending on like what level we've put our purpose on. Like when basic values or like basic things come into conflict, then usually it's not a good place to, I mean, that's difficult to move around. Whereas if it's just like a technicality or a formulation or like a word that comes in the way, then it's maybe easier to be open and stay open.
Yeah.
If you're like fundamentally disagreeing with the, or something like that. Oh. But you used the word collaboration now, and you said something right before I hit record about the Swedish word samverkan, which is more like act together or together acting or something like that. Together working or together.
Yeah, I think that word is actually an interesting word that is not so easy to translate, because I was part of another interview about samverkan and tried to explain it in German actually, and that wasn't so easy either. But then I just realized that the word samverkan is a very beautiful word, because it consists of sam, and that's together, and then verkan. I mean, you could translate it as acting together, but also maybe effect, or it has some
affecting together. Something. Yeah, that's right.
So it's both that when you are collaborating or samverkan, then you are at the same time acting together, and it has effect, and you are creating effect together. And I think that's interesting in that word actually.
Yeah, because in Swedish you would say orsak och verkan, and that's like cause and effect.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's like it lives close to that meaning in English.
So it relates to what we were talking about, being in a conversation, and that is acting. Like communication can be acting, or talking can be acting. But it's we could see it that way. I mean, if you say, because you said something like, but we could talk, but we are not actually listening to each other or something. But I think, and that's the point in it. So when we are listening to each other, then we are taking in the other's perspectives. And in that taking in, I think we will understand a little bit more how our entity or our part relates to the other parts. And then it's more easy for us maybe when we get back to our ordinary business or what we're doing, we can do things. Maybe we do things a little bit different because we know about these other parts of it or how it is related. So that could be one explanation why that is. Actually, listening and talking is also acting in a way.
That's interesting, because I mean, I have explorations all over the place as well. And one of the explorations that I've been on has been around sort of this polarity between the masculine and the feminine, where I've been tracking some maps and like following a lot of the discussions around what it is and what it isn't and why it's so important and like blah, blah, blah. Like everything from more conventional aspects, but like also sort of the men's movement of like men should be more men and women should be more women, like feminine and like all of that stuff, as well as more reconciling theory. But where I'm sitting right now in that entire exploration is that, there are useful maps of different things everywhere. And like when if I push off against a map, like masculine and feminine, but also if I push off against a map, it could be just a multi-stakeholder collaboration, like this is how it should be done map. that's what I mean by map. Then that's really interesting. But oftentimes I feel like it comes back to what you were just speaking to right now, which is around a relationship between me and not me. So like self and other, if you will, like that it's such a trivial question, but if I can kind of hold the perspective that I'm only discovering and exploring myself through the other, like everything that happens is an invitation for me to discover something new about myself, or learn something, it would be another way to, then it's really, but it seems really fundamental, really basic in a way, and really fundamental. And is it that simple? Or is it too simple?
I don't know if I understand the question, because now I was just thinking when you were talking now, I just thought about this, your first question, who are you? And I thought about this, yeah, but I'm so many things. You know, we are so many parts. We are so many voices. We are so many, I'm so many things. It's very, very, I'm the feminine and the masculine and the blah, blah, blah. It just depends on how I frame it or how I put it right now or what stories I tell right now. So, and then we come back to that. I think this, that we think it's so hard to accept that we don't know who we are. And that's the same with actually then in collaboration processes, that we don't know what is actually happening here. We don't know exactly what, why, or what the effects will be. That's another part of these samverkans processes or collaboration processes, that it's very many people say, yeah, okay, but what are the results, and can you really show is the results and so on? And it's very, very difficult, because the results and the effects are within the system, in different parts of the system, and it's very difficult to say what it is. So it has to do with actually having some kind of trust to the process, and I mean, that's also cliche, right, to say trust the process, but it's, in a way, it is part of that, to trust that the process, that us bringing together a different perspectives and trying to understand each other, that process is a big value when we try to understand complex issues, for example. But we don't know exactly how, what the value is like, or how we will realize the value, or I don't know. What was your question, actually? What was that kind
actually, of but I want to follow this thread, just because what popped up in my head was around, like when you lead processes like this, samverkans processer, or like these cross collaboration processes, what are your tools for assess, given that it's hard to know the effects and the results and like where they sit in the system and what actually the important shifts are to have an effect on the thing that you're looking at and so forth, how do you assess the health of the process, if it's constructive or not?
Yeah, and the easy answer to that is actually by being very to involve everyone that's involved in the process. So so actually the most important tools, I think, and methods are the ones that make visible what everyone is thinking, what everyone brings to the table, what everyone, how everyone is experiencing what is happening in the process, how we can look at the process from different perspectives and try to hold that, those different perspectives on what we are doing. And also, I mean, those processes, We are talking a lot about groan zone, for example, that part of the process when it's really frustrating, when we feel like, when some people feel like we need to do something and the other people feel like, no, we need to talk a little bit more about this. We don't know enough yet, and so on. And it comes to, the different organizations' agendas or assignments or something like that. And it's difficult to stay in that tension. And the other thing is that for some people, it's very difficult to stay in that tension, like in my case, in that other process. And for other people, it's not difficult because they don't think would say that we are in a groan zone or in a difficult zone. So navigating in that space where everyone has another view on what we are doing, how we are doing it, what's important. So at the same time, kind of provide some kind of safety or security in we are heading somewhere, we are doing something important, and at the same time opening up for, but we don't actually know exactly what we are doing because we have a lot of different views on that, and we don't know what is the true view on that. So actually the thing that we all need to realize is that it's interesting that we have so many different views on it. And trust the process now. I don't know. When I'm talking about it, when I'm listening to myself now, I think, what the hell are we doing actually in those processes?
what I'm moving towards, or what I'm curious about, is like, what are the warning bells for? Like, when is trust the process just an excuse? Like, when does it stop being? When should we actually stop trusting the process? Like,
I don't know. That was my inner fight, right, in that process when I was part of that. And what I realized then was, it's just up to me. I just need to find out, okay, is it, can I, what, it's just my own decision, but it's very personal. And I think that's also something that I feel is important in those processes. If you take them seriously, that you will be involved very personally, because you also need to let go of a lot of perspectives that you have since earlier or something. You need to be able to change in a way, but still, of course, you need to keep your inner values. You know, this is really a tricky question, but I think it's a really important question, and I don't think that we are thinking about it so much, how much it has to do with us as a human being, or as a person, or as an individual. It's but it has a lot to do with that, I think. I mean, like, for example, when I look at what we are doing, Anna and I'm doing here in Lenka Consulting, that we have always have had this perspective, or we have seen it like Lenka is existing as long as our inspiration is existing, right? As long as that is a living thing, that we are really inspired and we are really feeling that this is worth it, then Lenka is, that's Lenka. And when that starts to disappear or something, or fade away, then Lenka is no longer, that's no value anymore. So I think it's very, so that could be one part of it, that we need to be careful that we don't think that the process per se is the reason why we're doing it, or the construction that we have built, that is the reason why we're doing it. Because what is the reason needs to be very clear for everyone, that this is really important and I believe in this in a way. That's what is going to be the force or the power in this process.
It sounds almost like Because that's been my experience when holding groups and inviting to different explorations and trying to discover something together, or like figuring out what we were supposed to do together. Because it seems like we could be doing something, but we don't really know what, and things like that. And then it seems to be sort of the, when I start questioning the process is when people start dropping out. Mm-hmm. Or like not showing up fully, or like things, when things happen, and even though there might be great excuse or like reasons for why people aren't showing up, then there's still information in that. And typically I would sort of follow up and check in with, and maybe they are really interested and everything's great, but maybe it's also information about the process itself. And also like you're saying, in terms of like, what are we doing? If that relates to a lot of different identities that I carry, typically that's a good sign for me. And then if it's very narrow or a very specific thing, I'm only doing this because it's I can clearly formulate what utility this will have, then that might still be a good, valuable process, a worthwhile thing to do, but it's not necessarily then a complex process anymore. Then it should turn into something else. Then it could be much more, then we could set a plan and just get the thing done and be done with it, rather than, so that it shapes, it could also shape shift as a result of clarity that many people are feeling or something like that. Mm. And because it relates to what I was asking before about the self and the other as well, I think, because of, and maybe this is a bit contrived, but I do think that it has to do with it in some way, that as long as I am learning, because learning is a complex process, so as long as I'm learning, then we're still in complexity.
Mm.
But if I stop learning and start being certain and start wanting to go to the meetings to just tell people how it is, then maybe I shouldn't trust the process anymore, unless someone can kind of ruffle me out of that certainty.
It's kind of a listening skill, I think, to feel that, like you were saying, when people are dropping out, for example, or you can feel that the energy is changing in a way or something like that. And what we are what I think is also what you're saying, that you need to check that out with them. So why aren't you showing up? And maybe they say, yeah, no, it's just I didn't have the time, and blah blah blah. And maybe it's important to say, yeah, but I understand that you say that, but is, could there be another reason? Is, could it be something like it's not that interesting, or do you think that we should talk about something else when we meet, or what would make you really prioritize these meetings? And because you really want to get that out of people, drivkraft, driving force, where does that come from? Because that's what you need, because that's something very clear in collaboration processes, that no one can force anyone else to do something. So you really need to tap into everyone's driving forces, and you need to help each other finding that driving forces also. So what I think, I think the best thing that could happen actually in such processes is that you have someone that is really frustrated in the process, because then we use that expression, behind every problem there lies a frustrated dream, and the dream came first. So you need to be interested of that. So when someone is kind of, you know, always saying no or being frustrated and showing that very clearly and so on, and everyone around could tell the story about, well, this person is just always negative and, nothing is right for her and blah, blah, blah. And instead of doing that, being really moving towards that person and really embracing that frustration as a sign of something, often that will release a lot of energy in a process doing that. So that's also something that, you could say that when you have a process that is very smooth and nothing is, and it's nice, and we have kind of woohoo and hallelujah moments, and it's nice, and we are really like each other and it's funny and so on, then that's also something to think about. Should I trust this now? Is this really, could this be real when we are talking about this complex issue and everyone is just like, yeah. Because I think those processes are tough processes, really, and should be. And but sometimes we think that they should be smooth, but they shouldn't. I think is at least my experience. I don't think that's a good sign, actually.
No, because then you might not have the right people around the table, or I mean. And if everybody's in agreement of the solution and it's still a problem, then that's strange. Yeah. That's a bit strange.
Yeah, right? Yeah, like, exactly. And it's actually kind of interesting. So why is this so easy right now?
It's so... I don't know what I was about to say. But it lives to me in a very subtle manner. And I think, I mean, I had a conversation with Nora Bateson, and she said something like, the information isn't what's said, it is what was possible to say, or something like that. I don't know if it was information that she spoke about, but it's like it was just this invitation to consider what was possible to say in a particular relationship as the thing that we should focus on. And I hear that kind of idea coming through here as well, is that we need to create a possibility to say. So if we are in agreement, then maybe we are, or what we're looking at, or what we're allowed to say, or what we're bringing in is very narrow. And so then we might need to widen the scope, and there are probably different ways of doing that. Like either you bring someone else in, or you ask different questions or something like that. But it seems to be a worthwhile focus, at least in the little experience that I have of complex process, seems to be around sort of widening what's possible to say. And like, especially if I'll be in meetings where things are very comfortable and I'm like, but you know, then I might connect to a friction in me and bring that out and say like, hey, I'm not so sure we're actually doing good work here, or like, I'm not, you know, whatever it might be that's alive, and then just see where it goes, and not to troll anyone, but out of actual curiosity and like honesty and commitment to the process, trying to bring it forward to make visible something that I was kind of feeling that's pre-rational. It's not formulated yet, but still is like, I don't know. It doesn't feel right. I don't know what's going on here, but I don't think I'm in agreement or something like that. Even that might be enough to.
Yeah. And I mean, that's so important, I think, what you say, because also that sense of friction or as you say, I don't know exactly what it is actually, but something doesn't really feel right. And then I think that's when you need another person who is really curious about tell more about that feeling. When do you feel that? What could it have to do with? You need help of bringing that out, right? And that's something really important, I think, and that's why it's good to say we had a podcast conversation with a person who said it's really good that collaboration is difficult. I always tell all the people around me that collaboration processes are really, really difficult, and that I just do it because I want them to realize that they need to have another view on it, right, or to see it in a different way, and to really mobilize a lot of resources when you go into those processes, and that's a part of it. I think that you really, that's a part of this. It's not going to be smooth and easy, and that's also not a good sign. So it's a good sign when we have a lot of friction. So, and if you have a group and you all become very comfortable with saying that, now I feel like this is not. Something is not okay for me right now, and you know that all the other ones will kind of look at you and say, okay, then we will work with that. What's that about? Instead of sitting there and thinking, this doesn't feel right, but I don't want to do something, I don't want to slow down the process, or to, you know, because that's what everyone is actually, that's kind of this narrowing thing, right? To think that we need to do everything according to the plan and to the time plan and to everything. That's something that is works against that talking about the friction.
And a really concrete example comes up for me, because I used to be in a board of an industry association. And a lot of the times when we were there, you know, you kind of stepped in as the board member of the industry association. And then we had all these great ideas. And then it took a while for us to identify the question, okay, good. Now we work this out. Would you do it? If you go back home and you're the CEO of your company, would you do it? Would you sign up for it?
Mm.
Quite often, the answer in switching roles like that would be, no, I don't think so. So and then you're like, but that's what we're asking our members to do. Mm. You know, it's so obvious, but you're in a certain space, and that certain space has a certain logic. And you're like, this is great. We're doing great work. This is wonderful. We're having a wonderful creative discussion, and things are like really happening and jiving. And it's like all these cool things that are coming together, and all of them are possible. But in the end of the day, when we shift our role and like just connect to another part of our identity that we also carry, another professional role, then it's like, I don't know. It's not right. It doesn't feel right for my company. It's like, but then who's like, who would it feel right? Like, if not for you, then who? Like, and that comes back to that personal thing that you were talking about very directly, I think.
I think that's a very common phenomenon that you're describing. So, and a lot of people are sitting in those processes and collaboration processes around complex issues, and they are not bringing up everything that is actually concerns or something. And that's a problem. So, and I think also it has to do with, couldn't we just slow down a little bit? Because I think we are, it's like we have all these that was actually also my issue with that process where I stepped out, that it was like we need to do everything like the plan, and we need to do this and that and this, and we hadn't really found out what could we do together. I mean, it's and it's just this, because I think the problems are so complex. I mean, look at the climate problem. It's so, so complex. So how can we imagine that we can initiate a lot of processes that are kind of so narrow, and they will solve this problem, and we will, and we have kind of a plan, and it's very detailed, and we, how can we even, who believes in that? I think it's, so just having, what would happen if we just have, create a space and time for different stakeholders to meet and discuss and go deep in different issues without any goals of solving anything, but just trying to understand something. And I think we do that far too little. Yeah, and we would need that so much, but that's not the way we are used to do something, or that's not the paradigm, and it's not, you know, speaking of the right way of doing things. So instead we are standing on different perspectives and in different places and shouting out how we should do this and how we should solve this, and no one is listening to the others because they are busy with shouting out their own things. So,
yeah, it seems to also deal with something you said initially about very early on, like you said very briefly, like discovering a hole, to focus on that hole, mm-hmm. which is in a way it's like you have to deal with also then sort of observer effects and things like that, because you can't see a hole from the inside, because there's always some part of you, part of it that's invisible to you. So if you can formulate it clearly and grasp it on your own, then I would say you're probably not looking at the hole. You're out of it, and so therefore it becomes interesting to see And part of the inquiry, because that's what where my mind went. So I'm just going to go with it. When you said that, was that so much of what we're doing, how we come together in what form is much more important than what we think. I think is much more important than what we think. So if we come together as professionals for something, then that already has put a very strict filter on what we're doing. And if we come together as in an association, if we come together in a company, if we come together in a co-op, if we come together in a whatever, you know, it might be, those are also different things that we are. And what I find increasingly is like those spaces that invite more of us, like again, the more full, the hockey fan and the father and the professional person and the skier and the whatever, like all of those things that might be relevant for, like then the more of them that I can be and like the more of them that's possible for me to speak from, again, from that point, then we have a chance, because then we have, there's so much movement, like wiggle room there. Like there's, at least we won't get stuck. Maybe what we discover isn't even meant to be happening in that arena. And that's, I guess, what you're saying. It's like, we don't necessarily need to drive every project to do something, but it might be enough to discover something or just to be together so that we can go home and do the work on her. Maybe we're doing the right thing already, like in a different context. We just need a bit of motivation, something like that. And this is going to be a contrived bridge. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
First. No. Continue.
Because I want to get to talk about the Bible. So I was like, what's the biggest hole that we could think about? And maybe that's God. And there's the Bible. Ta-da. Yeah.
I know a bridge. I know a bridge.
Okay.
It's
cool.
From Thank the you. Temptation of certainty. Because if you think that you are, because this temptation of certainty is actually one antidote to that is actually God, right? Because I can never understand fully anything or the whole, or, you know, but when I think, and that's, I think my, you know, yeah, because it's interesting that you want to talk to me about the Bible, because I'm really not a Bible expert, but I have read the Bible now, the last 6 months in a way. And what is my biggest takeaway from that, and I had a lot of takeaways from that, and I really want to read it more often, and I want everyone to read it actually. but one takeaway is this, I think the whole Old Testament is actually about realizing that there is a God, or the people fighting with that, is there a God or is there not a God, or are we gods as human beings? So, and it has to do with accepting that, okay, there is a God and it's greater than I am and we are together, and all the stories, I think, has to do with that in one way or the other. And it has to do with how can we make life easy for us, collaborating and living together. And one important part of that is actually to accept that there is a God. And there is a lot of wisdom in that, I think.
But that's, it's interesting, because what I'm hearing you speak to is that even kind of when we step into a complex process, then an attitude, regardless of what your opinion is about religion, let's not worry so much about what you believe in necessarily. But if you step in with an attitude of faith, like that open-endedness, that is like there's something beyond, then that is a conducive attitude to the process. There's something that I don't know is another way of saying it. And that's kind of, in a way, what I'm hearing you speak to, that the Bible has to, and I've also been reading it very sloppily over some type of, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, because you've done a more rigorous study than I am, even though there are other people that have done even deeper studies,
really?
Of course. But yeah.
But what are your thoughts? I mean, you have been reading the Bible, so what do you think? What is your kind of?
But before, because I just blanked on when you said, like, are we gods? Are we? And that's such a relevant discussion. I mean, there is this saying that keeps going around in my social media, like a meme thing that says, like, we have godlike powers, so we need godlike wisdom or something like that. I mean, we're kind of close to the Tower of Babel again. Like, if you look at the, we're trying to build it. We are convincing ourselves that this is it. There's nothing else. And there is a certain level of certainty there. And from there stems all of these not complex solutions to the climate problem, like geoengineering, there are all these terrifying command and control solutions to these problems that are being posted by people that think that they know. And in a way, if you read it lightly, then that would be the work of the devil or Moloch or one of those entities that are that keep showing up in the book. Sorry, I wanted to say that. My feeling is similar. I'm also like, because I've only interacted with some of the stories on a very childish level, or like the way that, like, on a flat level, it's like bits and pieces of things of like David and Goliath, and like there are all these like things. But I find it very interesting to read the context in which they appear, where there's like lots more complexity. Generally, it's like it's very hard to say good guy, bad guy. It's like there's a certain angle from which, but if you actually read the stuff or like listen, I listen to it. So if I actually listen to the stuff, then you're like, but wait, hold, what? Oh, but that wasn't nice. Or like, you're a bit of an ass. Like there are all these like complicating factors around these like good people or powerful people, or like it's really multidimensional, a lot of the stuff, at least because I'm not through the Old Testament yet, so I'm still working my way through there.
But even God, right? I mean, God in the Old Testament is not really nice. He's kind of really, not a nice, I mean, he's not a person, but he seems like a person in many stories, and then he's not always a very nice person. So even that is interesting, I think, that this, and also in some stories, God is, because that's also a very interesting question, I think, about the devil or the bad and the good and some and things like that. And I think there are stories where it actually is described as if, I mean, and the devil parts are also parts of God. So because God is everything. So I mean, and that's also interesting. And I think it's interesting, again, regarding this, what we do not know, because as you say, we trust the process, or I go into something and I have an idea of what I'm going to contribute here or what I'm going to do and what I think is right. But actually, I don't know, because only God knows. So, and that's something really nice in that approach, I think, and not nice, but kind of calming down, because otherwise you get really obsessed with your idea and yeah, about your idea of how this should be, and I also think it's interesting in myself as a human being, that I can feel, you know, if I feel like I'm in flow, I'm doing something and I'm really into it, and it's just flowing, and it's I think that you could say that could be kind of a godlike or experience or something, or just but it's a here and now moment. It's not like now I'm godlike for the rest of my life, but because it's just in that specific situation I was able to maybe not be so occupied with a lot of negative thoughts or thoughts about how it should be or everything like that. And if we can let that kind of flow come into our processes, I think then something godlike could happen. But it's, again, it's one situation maybe and another situation, and it's not all the time. And it's more, so I think what we could think about more is like, okay, what is holding us back? Yeah. And look more at that. Or as we were talking about, what is the friction here right now? Just look at it. And that will open up for something, but we don't know what, but maybe.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, you see it in the, I have a hard time reading the prophets. They are tricky to me. But in, it's like with Moses, it's pretty clear. Like there are some like clear stories. And then like gradually as you move through them, like I'm on those like later ones now. It's very hard to know what we're talking about. Like I'm confused a lot of the time when I'm engaging with it. But there is something around the invitation to do all these absurd things that doesn't make any sense. And kind of, as long as they keep doing it, they are in the flow. So then they get to be godlike. They get to keep being the communication vessel through which God is speaking. And as long as they stop, then they're out of the flow. And then these insights keep coming. So, I mean, it's like a similar, it seems to me at least, there's like a similar principle there at work. And I'm also curious, but like that's another thing that's there for me in the, and I've been listening a lot to this Swedish podcast Myter och Mysterier, but Per Johansson is to me an interesting thinker, but he speaks about the spirit in which we do things, mm-hmm. like the spirit in which we, and I hear that a lot in the Bible as well, that there is the good God, the one that we like or supposed to like, that we're supposed to have faith in, but it's also I'm curious about sort of the tension between, like, I've always been told that there's only one God and it's only one. But in the Old Testament, at least, there are all these other, at least superhuman entities that are like roaming the land, and other people are worshiping them. And their opinion is that they're bad people, but there's no real questioning of the other God's authority. So there are other gods, other entities around at the same time. And there's a choice to be like, had and from this one perspective, our God's the best God, but the other ones are still there. Like there's a really interesting paradox or at least tension to me there in that, and it makes me wonder, like bringing it back to the complex process to ground it, because you know, it's like, what is the spirit of which I am engaging with this process? Is it, again, like, is it a full open, relaxed, like curious, sort of in service, like am I here fully available, ready to be taken or sort of been instrumentalized, not to my own ends, but just to whatever needs to happen? Or am I here for a reason, for some other, to be dramatic about it, some other God or some other entity or some other spirit that's filling me? Like, am I doing this to manipulate or push or thwart a process? Like those are also two very different ways of showing up.
Yeah, so what am I serving right now? Or what force, or what idea, or what? Yeah, that's, yeah, but that's so tricky, right? I mean, that's why it's so tricky. That's why we have that very, very rich book of books. So where you can read about, actually, when you read the Bible, I think it's, that becomes very obvious, as you say, it's so complex and it's so difficult. And how can we understand this? How is it possible to grasp all this, actually? It's really, really difficult. And I think, but only that insight is a great insight, I think, to understand that this is something that people have struggled with for forever. So it's an important struggle, right? Or how can we believe right now at this point in history that this struggle is not for us? Like, no, we don't need that struggle because we can just solve things in different ways. That's kind of a ignorant position in a way, I think.
Because we met at a book launch where you interviewed another friend of mine who's been on the podcast, Fredrik Forss, about his book about an AI god. And I mean, in a way, that just came up to me again, like in terms of the ignorance, and that we're so trusting of other things that we don't understand, but that we made, that they are, that again, like in this absolution of responsibility or something like that. Like, I don't, oh, good, poof, someone else figured it out. Like, it's good. Then I can ignore it and just be sure that things will be fine or things won't be fine. I mean, both of those are, I mean, I think more positions of certainty. So you started us off with a temptation of certainty on this little sidetrack, and that, yeah, I'm losing myself.
Yeah, I think this is important. What I'm hearing that you are, or what I'm thinking when I listen to you now, is that what we have lost very much in our society, at least in the Swedish society, is because I've also been thinking a lot about, you know, I've been reading the Bible, and I've been thinking about, yeah, but maybe it's, I mean, we should read the Bible just as a cultural thing, you know, you don't need to believe in God or something like that. It doesn't have to be religious. And I've been kind of anxious about this word religious, or as if that is something not so good, because religion is not so good, because look at all the things that have happened in the name of religion, and so many bad things have happened and so on. But I think that now I also realize that the religion is about rituals that we have in our society, right? It's about how to live a good life in a way that, like a morally good life. The Ten Commandments and all this, there are so many things in the Bible about how to live our lives and how to perform these rituals, for example. And what has happened with all those rituals in our society? They are not existent anymore. And I feel right now like that's a longing that I have to actually be part of a community that has some rituals. You know, you can go to the church, but it's really kind of empty, at least where I live. And then it feels absurd in a way to be there on my own and kind of, yeah. So, and I know that I'm kind of fascinated with the Jewish religion, for example, because they still have a lot of rituals and they still perform them and live them. And I just love that. Or, you know, you say a prayer before you eat, for example. You just say a prayer to be thankful. You just express your gratefulness for being able to eat something. And that's so, and I think when we lose that, we have lost that very much, I think. Because all these rituals are actually reminders of there is a God. There is a God, and you are not the God. There is another God. and I think that's maybe making it easier for us than to go into new religions or new ways of believing things or new ideas of what is it actually about. And because we are not held by those rituals. I think because they could be kind of a support system or protection system for losing ourselves in some kind of.
And but also what I'm hearing in religion is the rituals are there, but the rituals aren't, it's like the finger and the moon. Like, the rituals aren't the moon, they're just the finger. And they're a path, they're a portal to get at something. So there could be like a portal for forgiveness or a portal to let go of something or a portal to, like, there are these like things that you are offered as a result of engaging in a particular ritual. And but it's still just to help your own internal process of like maybe maintaining that openness or maintaining that uncertainty. And when religion becomes, again, when that becomes the thing we're doing, the certainty, the thing that's right, then we're out of it again. Like, that, then we lost it again. And so it seems to be this sort of strive towards wanting to know, but accepting that we don't know at all. And I had Jonas Rupia here, and he said, like, you have to absolve yourselves of the musts. Like, if you, one way to do that is to say, like, everything's already done. It's already gone to shit. Like, all of the world is over. It's burnt. It's scorched. Like, you can see there's so many signs that says this climate crisis is not about to happen. It's already happening. And, like, most of it is irreversible. So how do you want to live your life then? Like, and when you let that go, all this joy bubbles up, and like there are all these possibilities, and like we can have stupid and silly and messy conversations like this one, and it feels super meaningful, and I'm walking away enriched and wiser for it, and I will be able to implement it in my daily life with my processes. So for me, it doesn't feel messy at all. It feels like extremely like I got to see something that was very concrete and very exactly what I needed right now, you know. And so there's but it's not linear. It's like you have those two voices in the book too, the linear and the circular voice. But this is like circular, and it's like a little bit back, and it's more like dancing than running a marathon or something like that.
Yeah. And it's kind of, exactly. The circular is more, it's really open also. It's open for what is happening, and I'm here. And
there's like a reframe that happens when we, because we say that, oh, but now we're back where we started. And then I have a friend who says, no, you're forward where you started. You've come forward to where you started. You come out where you started. Like, and it isn't you, because when you come back to realization, you're not at the same place where you started. You have all the other like nuance and depth and learnings with you. And still you ended up in a place that was close. But it's not the same place. It's a new place. Is there something else that we should have talked about that I didn't manage to derail us into? Or just
I just want to say, because I think now I've said a lot of how complex it is and so on, I just wanted to say that I still believe in, regarding the collaboration processes, that I still believe that it's a competence and it's a skill that we can actually train. And that we can actually train that. It's a very different way of doing things, maybe, but it's possible to train kind of taking this communication perspective on what we are doing, for example, or being aware of this linear and circular voices in ourselves and so on. So I think it's, I just wanted to say that.
Can I test the thought on that? Because what I'm experimenting with a perspective that the doing it, like everybody's doing it all the time, because like just the fact that we are able to do something so that we get a paycheck at home, for instance, every month, regardless of if it's from the state or from a company, that's navigating complex processes. But what the invitation is when you start working with this stuff is it's a different way of attending to it. So there's like a different way of positioning yourself in relationship to it, and maybe have more of this sort of oscillation of like in and out and very close and very far away and moving around a bit more. And so like looking in different directions or like paying attention to or attuning to or whatever the right verb is. To it. So I just wanted to make the distinction between like being able to do it like consciously or just let it happen to you. Or like, so it's like, it's almost like a, I don't know, they didn't really quite capture it. But
yeah, but I think that's different layers also, because the one thing is like the having kind of different skills to lead processes, to be a good facilitator, right? And, nice. And things like that, and navigating, and also that has to do with when you are the facilitator of such a complex process, you need to navigate within yourself. So you have a lot of different voices in yourself, and you have a lot of struggles in yourself, and you need to be aware of that and to handle that in a way. But I think the other thing is what you're saying with the, you need to get paid and you need to have a job and you need to, because that's another part of it, right? To be true to yourself and to really think that what I'm doing is I'm choosing this because I believe in it, for example, or I want to be true to my own values and so on. That's a maybe deeper existential question that is up to everyone you could say that everyone has a choice, and someone would say, no, I don't have a choice. But that's another level of it, I think. Like, yeah. But it's important, I think, in all this that we are talking about, also with the Bible and religion and everything, that it's important what you also mentioned with what do I serve right now? I mean, it's my choices. Are they guided by the economic system that I'm a part of? Or what are they, where do they come from? And when we want to change something, we need to start with ourselves also, right? So, and how do I live my life, and what is my, yeah. I think it's more and more obvious for me that this is interconnected. So when you are working, you can, you know, there is an expression in Swedish, eldsjälar.
Like fire souls, or like the people that really burn, or really
people that really burn. So fire souls, right? So, I think in that case, it's very, very clear that their own motivation and fire comes from a really personal conviction of something, or value or something. So, and that's why they can accomplish so much. So, and so there is a connection there. And people who don't have that, they don't accomplish as much. And they are not able to do that in the same way. So, but I don't know if that's just the some of the people who have that, or if it's something that you could find in everyone. I don't know. I think we have really, it's really big questions here in your podcast. I don't know if I'm living up to that level. It feels like not really, big questions.
I loved the fact that we were able to get lost in really big questions for a while. It's fun. It's energizing to me, and it was valuable to me. So I'll take that as a good. I want to keep engaging with the process. So trusting the process.
Yeah.
If people want to find you or read your books and so forth, where would you direct them?
Yes, I would direct them to our homepage. And we have a small English part of that homepage also, but it's not so developed yet. But I think we will try. We are thinking about actually writing a book in English. We will see if we manage to do that. But you can find us at Lanka Consulting. So it's Lanka with K Consulting.
Yeah. I'll put the link in the show notes as well, so it's clickable. Yeah. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you so much. It was great to have this big question conversation with you.